HSBC is cutting back in the U.S. and Europe. Why the bank is eliminating 35,000 jobs.
So it was really like a realization that the bank was just too big and has to get smaller.
And the case of longtime Trump advisor Roger Stone has had plenty of twists and turns. We'll look at the latest. It's Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Janet Babin for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The Trump administration has stepped up its efforts to pressure Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro by blacklisting the trading brokerage owned by Russia oil giant Rosneft. The U.S. says the brokerage has been helping Caracas evade U.S. sanctions by facilitating the sale and transport of Venezuelan crude. Elliot Abrams is the U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela. He says the U.S. is considering further sanctions on companies believed to be aiding Maduro.
Today's sanctions are another step in the policy of pressuring the Maduro regime to allow Venezuela to escape from its terrible crisis through free and fair presidential elections. There will be more steps and further pressure.
Russian officials criticized the move and said the sanctions wouldn't affect Moscow's business with Venezuela. Democratic presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg has released a series of proposals that would strengthen oversight of Wall Street. His plans include tougher tests on the health of banks and merging the mortgage finance giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and keeping them under government control. Bloomberg is also proposing to toughen the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial overhaul. The proposals are an effort by Bloomberg to distance himself from his Wall Street roots. They also position him closer to his Democratic rivals on financial policy. The plans were released ahead of tomorrow night's Democratic presidential primary debate in Las Vegas, where Bloomberg will share a stage with the other candidates for the first time. President Trump took a series of clemency actions Tuesday, commuting the prison sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and pardoning former financier Michael Milken and former New York Police Department Commissioner Bernard Carrick. Blagojevich was in the middle of serving a 14-year prison sentence for corruption. In 2008, he tried to sell an appointment to the Senate seat vacated by Barack Obama. Milken, known as the junk bond king, was serving a 10-year sentence for several violations of securities law in 1990. Carrick, who won national acclaim for managing the NYPD in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, served 4 years for tax fraud and lying to federal officials. He was released in 2013. The pardons come as President Trump's longtime advisor, Roger Stone, was back in court to push for a delayed sentencing in his trial for lying to Congress. We'll have more on that case coming up. Europe's biggest bank by assets, HSBC, says it's cutting 35,000 jobs and scaling back operations in the U.S., mainland Europe, and its investment bank. HSBC says it's going to invest more in its fast-growing Asian and Middle Eastern operations to boost profit. Right now, it makes half its revenue in Asia. We've got The Wall Street Journal's Margot Patrick joining us to discuss. Hey, Margot.
Hi.
So where is this decision coming from HSBC?
Well, this is what they're calling a business update that's been underway really since August, when the last CEO left and a new CEO came in, at least temporarily, Noel Quinn. He's actually the interim CEO. So he's been working with his team on coming up with a way for HSBC to respond to pressures it's feeling in its main markets, which are the UK and Hong Kong. So they're addressing some problems that have been around for a while. Like, they have a very large, what they call global banking and markets business. So it's a trading business, also investment banking, and serving corporate banking clients. And a lot of those customers just weren't really profitable, and they weren't making money in some of those market trading businesses. So what they've laid out today is really scaling back in some of those businesses, particularly in the U.S. and in Europe.
You write that HSBC has Asian roots, but Europe was the focus of its business. So why this move?
Well, the UK is still a home market for HSBC, and that's not really going to change. But there have been a bunch of regulatory changes here that meant they had all these business activities that
weren't really core to serving the UK retail customers and business customers. They also, like I said, like a lot of markets trading was going through London, and also things like trading European equities, like businesses that really it looked around and thought, well, we don't really need these. We're not really making money from them. So it's really like I think of it more of like a continental Europe withdrawal. And we had reported in September that they were putting their French retail bank, which is pretty significant. It's a pretty big business, that they were looking to sell that. So this is like kind of building onto that, just looking at Europe, looking at the economic forecast for Europe and thinking, well, this is not really a part of the world. We're going to make a lot of money. We're too big here. Let's focus more on Asia, where we're also big, but you know, there's a lot more opportunity there for growth.
Yeah. And broadening even more, HSBC isn't really alone here, right? Other banks have also cut down operations. So do you think that this is indicative of the entire banking sector?
Well, I'd say it's for European banks, things are very difficult right now just because of low interest rates and just like the weak economy. So U.S. banks are in a better position, but all the European banks have really had to shrink. And that's been a story for, you know, quite a few years now. And HSBC was kind of going against that trend because it has such a large Asian business. It was able to keep all these other parts of the operation going, but they weren't really making money. So it's kind of like a, you know, an awakening, a realization that they can't continue, especially when the UK is facing all this economic uncertainty from Brexit and what happens there. And also in Hong Kong, you know, they've been hit this year by the anti-government protests. And now today we're warning about the economic effects of the coronavirus. So it was really like a realization that the bank was just too big and has to get smaller.
This restructuring is going to hurt, right? It's going to be costly. I think the bank expects to incur like $7.2 billion of costs as a result of this. How will this move, you think, help HSBC compete with other big players going forward?
Well, it's going to end up smaller. So it won't have as many branches, even in places like the U.S. They're talking today about closing down about half the branches on the East Coast. The bank has, I think, about 300 branches in the U.S., and mainly on the coasts, on the East-West Coast, and they're going to focus more on the West Coast now. So it's going to have a, you know, what they call their footprint is just going to get smaller. You know, this has been going on for a while for HSBC. Since 2011, they've exited a lot of countries. They exited most of Latin America, a lot of parts of the world that they just pulled out of. So this is like the next iteration, really, of trying to figure out what is HSBC going to look like in the future. And the message has always been it's going to be Asia-focused, but now we're seeing, you know, there's other parts of the world, they're just not making money.
The Wall Street Journal's Margot Patrick. Margot, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Roger Stone, a longtime advisor to President Trump, was convicted last year of lying to Congress and tampering with witnesses. On Tuesday, Stone was back in court asking a federal judge to delay his sentencing. That request was denied. His sentencing is still scheduled for Thursday. But that may not be the end of it. Our reporter Aruna Viswanatha has been following his trial, and she joins us now. Hey, Aruna.
Sure, thank you.
Aruna, Roger Stone's case has been a tumultuous one, really heating up over the last week or so. What did the judge say today?
Today was somewhat more procedural after the drama of the past week. The judge definitely alluded to it and said right at the outset, like, today we are here to talk about the timeline and that's it. I'm not going to get into the merits of any of these issues right now, but he was scheduled to be sentenced on Thursday. He filed a last-minute motion for a new trial. That motion is under seal, so it's in secret. We don't really know exactly what he's saying, but it seems to be about a potential bias by a member of the jury. And she said that she would consider that motion, but she would do so after she sentenced him, and she was going to go ahead and actually sentence him on Thursday. And it seemed as if she clearly wants to have it be known what she thinks is the appropriate sentence for the conduct he was convicted of.
Roger Stone was convicted last year of lying to Congress and witness tampering. If you could just remind us, Aruna, quickly about the background for that conviction.
Sure. So He was indicted last January, and he was charged with lying to Congress. So if you think back to when the House Intelligence Committee was conducting this investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, they were looking at WikiLeaks' publication of all of these emails that had been hacked from Democrats. They brought in Roger Stone because he seemed to have some advanced knowledge that these emails were going to be coming out and be damaging. And they asked him where he got his information, and what he was indicted on ultimately was lying to Congress about where he got that information.
This past week, we've also seen this back and forth between the Justice Department and the Trump administration over this. Can you walk us through that whole situation?
Yes. So because he was scheduled to be sentenced this Thursday, the court had set last week as a deadline for the government and for Mr. Stone's defense team to file their recommendations for what they think the judge should ultimately sentence him to. It's ultimately up to the judge, but both sides can submit their recommendations. So prosecutors on the trial team filed a recommendation that fell between 7 to 9 years in prison, which sounds somewhat high, but that is what there's a set of sentencing guidelines that sort of dictate what these recommendations are going to look like. And once they added on all of these levels for various things that they believed Mr. Stone had done, they got to that 7 to 9 year range. When senior Justice Department officials saw that ultimate filing, they thought that that number was too high and quickly ordered this new filing be submitted, in which the government asks for something less than that. But that request came after the president tweeted about how unfair he thought the original recommendation was, which raised a lot of questions about whether the revised filing was being submitted at Mr. Trump's direction.
And we heard from President Trump today. He said that he never spoke to Barr about the case and that he hasn't given any thought to pardoning Stone, yet we saw him today pardon some others. What do we make of that?
Right. The timing of some of these pardons today is pretty interesting, given that Roger Stone is going to be sentenced later this week. From what the Attorney General has also been saying, they did not specifically have any discussions about Mr. Stone's case, but clearly it's well known what the president's views are.
Aruna, where does this go from here?
So in the near term, all eyes are going to be on Judge Amy Berman Jackson to see what kind of sentence she does end up imposing on Roger Stone. Will it be something around the 3 to 4 years that maybe the revised government filing was suggesting? Will it be closer to the 7 to 9 years that the original prosecutors had suggested? Will it be something different than that? That's, of course, the immediate question. And then after that, the judge is expected to rule on this request for Roger Stone to get a new trial. And if that happens, sort of all bets are off. And we kind of go through all this all over again. And then, of course, looming over all of this is whether the president does ultimately decide to pardon Roger Stone.
That's the Wall Street Journal's Aruna Viswanatha. Aruna, thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you.
And that's What's News for this Tuesday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate us and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Janet Babin for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.